Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome to the Ortho Joe Show, a joint production of the Journal of Bone and Joint Surgery and Ortho Evidence. In our world, orthopedic research is king, and current topics from our respective publications are analyzed weekly. Here is Mohit Bhandari from Ortho Evidence and Mark Swinkowski from the Journal of Bone and Joint Surgery.
Good. Well, good morning, Mo. I am here in the general office. I have my official Ortho Joe mug, which I have been assured by our esteemed guests that they've all received theirs.
Absolutely, yes, we have.
Absolutely priceless token of our appreciation for with which they can consume some Joe in the morning. So cheers, and please introduce our guests.
Yeah, I think we should get right into it, Mark. So we have three esteemed gentlemen joining us today. Let me begin with Professor Hans Krater. Hans Krater and I have known each other for many, many years. They're all University of Toronto surgeons, but he is currently the chief in the orthopedic division at Sunnybrook Health Sciences. And I've known Dr. Krater for many, many years. We're looking forward to a pretty exciting discussion over the next 20 minutes. I'll also state that the other two surgeons, I mean, I don't think I need to say much, but I will. But both Drs. Schatzker and Tile have been, I would say, I think we use the word icon fairly infrequently, I'd say, Mark, but I'd certainly say that they are two individuals that have demonstrated through a library of textbooks they've led, through numerous roles as presidents of many, many organizations. And I believe both have also achieved, for Canadians, a pretty impressive honor, which is the Order of Canada, to name a very, very few of accolades. Now, in no way does that undermine anything that I think that Professor Krater has done, because I can tell you, I could speak probably for another hour on Professor Krater and all his accolades. But enough of the gushing. Why don't we get down to having some discussion, if we could, around what it means, I guess, in the history. But Mark, I know you've got some questions first, and I've got a few lined up as well. Maybe I'll let you get started.
Mo, thanks for that fantastic introduction of our three esteemed guests. I've known Professor Krater for a long time, and he's half my age, but I don't want to start with a question for Hans. I want to just recall for Professor Tile, Professor Schatzker, that we first met in the, I think, one of the first AO courses in North America at Sun Valley in the early 80s. And my question is, how did you two get so involved with the AO? You've been stalwarts for the educational programs of the AO for decades and are still teaching. How did it all start?
I can begin because I'm a few months older than Joe. And basically, I was training in Toronto with George Pennell, my favorite of all time mentor, who did all the research in pelvic trauma. Mm-hmm. And I also spent a resident year at Sunnybrook on January 1963. And that was still a veterans hospital at that time with no emergency department, no trauma unit. If you got hit by a car, you went downtown. And that was the old veterans hospital. So I ended up with a Detweiler fellowship from the Royal College and went to Europe in 65 with a staff appointment to come back part-time to Sunnybrook and full-time to St. Joe's. And when I was in London, a man named Alan Letton, who was the president of the BOA, said to me, "Marvin, you're interested in trauma. Why don't you go to Switzerland?" I said, "Why would I go there? All I have is chocolate and cheese." He said, "Well, there's a guy named Morris Mueller there, and he's doing fantastic things. And so he wasn't on my trip. So I called George Pennell and I said, I want to go to St. Gallen to meet Morris Mueller. And that's how it all began with me. So we changed the trip. I went to Paris first with Judy and Letourneau, also to do with pelvis. I had met both of them before in Toronto. And with Morris Mueller, we went, my wife and I, with Dave Hastings, another colleague, and we spent a week with him, and I was totally floored by what I saw. I was completely converted to carry on with the AO, which at that time, of course, was basically unknown in North America, and even within Switzerland was not fully accepted by a long shot. And he had formed the AO in 1958 with Allgauer and 10 other surgeons, and they were just meeting on a regular basis. So the first AO course I went to was in, I think, 67. And Joe, I think you were our resident at the time, and I came. You were going to Gothenburg, and I said, change, go to Switzerland. But before that, we had invited Morris Mueller to talk in Toronto.
I can tell you guys about that.
That was a really interesting thing.
That will bring a smile to all your faces. I was a resident. That's 1965.
Yeah.
And Ed Simmons called and said, we've invited Maurice Mueller to come to the meeting in Toronto. I said, well, that's great. And I said, how will I know who he is? And well, some of you may remember Ed Simmons. And he said, well, go to the airport. And as he will come up, he is coming by plane. You look for a guy who has a little mustache, a lock of black hair over his forehead. You've seen Hitler before. That's Hitler. No, he's not Hitler, but he looks like Hitler. And with that, I picked up Maurice Mueller at the airport in my little VW. Well, I won't belabor you with all the things that happened in Toronto, but what you might be interested in, I went on my McLaughlin to Europe. I was in Gothenburg at the time. Carl Hirsch was the professor. And lo and behold, one day, there is Maurice Mueller. And I went at the end of his presentation, I went and said, Professor Mueller, do you recognize me? He said, oh, are you? Yes. And with that, he pulled out a sheaf of paper from his bag and said, we're writing the AO manual. You've got to translate it. And so, well, then I had a very interesting time when I finally got to St. Gallen. Maurice Mueller at that time lived in St. Gallen, but had already begun to operate in Bern. And every night, this repeated itself because I had started to translate the damn thing. And of course, at that time, we didn't have too many biomechanical terms. So I was with Brånemark in Sweden at the time. And there was a guy from Colombia, an engineer. And he saved my life because while I was trying to translate this manual, I would go to him and say, look, they have a term in German, Zugschraube. It means the screw is pulling. He said, no, you can't write the pull screw. It's a lag screw. You know, and so it went that the terminology that has plagued us all these years, I'm the culprit. you know, and so it went. The manual in German was published in 1969. And then in 1970, they published my translation. And the amusing thing was that people said, you know, the translation is better. You've corrected all the mistakes they made in the manual, in the German. Well, the rest of the story, you know, our association with the AO subsequently mirrored much of what Marv has told you. Yeah. I traveled somewhat of a different route than Marv, but both of us were in Sun Valley. Both of us were at really most of the meetings.
Yeah.
And, well.
You know, the thing that's so interesting is those who may not have met you, I suspect many have, they probably look at your lives and say, you know, these three individuals have had such illustrious careers, and surely they knew from day one that they had such a focus on their path that they were going to move and, you know, and move in this direction. It's almost like they were destined to be as great as they were. And maybe I'll start with you, Dr. Crater. When you look back at your career, I think, you know, I guess maybe we're all in that reflective age and period of time. We say, like, you know, there's a lot of luck. There's a lot of coincidence. There's a lot of doors that opened that you thought, why am I doing this? That turned out to be the right thing. Can you take us back to any of those periods where someone might say, well, that was a very calculated strategic decision that Dr. Crater made towards his career? But if you could tell him, say, that had nothing to do with strategy. This was all just a good luck situation. Is there anything like that you could share with us?
Well, for me, it's all about the people that you meet and that inspire you. And I can tell you that the two others on this call, along with Mark, who I met a little bit later during a fellowship that I did in Seattle, but as a resident, I was, very much, trying to do the best that I could. And when I did rotations at some other institutions, I really didn't get the sense that there was a comprehensive sort of way to understand what was, you know, being done in the musculoskeletal system. You know, some of my attendings would say, well, you know, this is how we do it. We put this plate on like this and, you know, where we nail these or whatever. But I didn't have the sense that there was a deeper understanding or meaning that I could sort of pursue. So I still remember the first lectures that I got from Joe and Marv. All of a sudden, there was this system, you know, this system that I could understand, a skeleton, if you will, that I could put facts onto that, you know, made sense. And you know, I was bitten at that time. You know, I thought, this is what I want to do. I want to, you know, gain a deeper and deeper understanding of this way of dealing with broken bones, of getting them to heal, of dealing with the whole patient. And of course, you know, I pursued in the footsteps of my two mentors and, you know, sort of did what I could to learn the system, to get involved with organizations like the AO and the OTA, and to, you know, sort of try and emulate the people that had taught and mentored me. And for me, that required some formal training. You know, I wasn't maybe as natural as Marv and Joe. I did some formal training through organizations to learn how to teach, to learn how to become a mentor and so on. But that's where it started for me. It was during a resident interaction with these two individuals. And, you know, they were kind enough to take me under their wing, so to speak. And I remember my first course in DeVos, I was just a young attending. And Jim Kellum and Marv and Joe got me involved in 1996 in DeVos courses. And, you know, like as a 1 year attending here at Sunnybrook, and I have been involved with that, and as I say, with the OTA and other organizations ever since. So that's what it was for me, just that understanding, that aha moment as a resident of there is a system I can understand and I can pursue that.
If I could just jump over to you, Dr. Tile, when you look back at all this, did you have a sense it was going to become as big as it did globally, and the work you did would have such an influence? It's sometimes it's hard to look back, maybe it's hard to understand the magnitude of both yours and Professor Schatzker's fame. And maybe you have a good sense of it, but you are did you have a sense it was going to be this big, or can you remind us when you thought, okay, this is much bigger than I presumed this was going to be? This movement is much bigger than I thought it was going to be.
I was pretty convinced that the two main people that really changed the world in orthopedics, transformative is the word in the dictionary, certainly transformative for me, were my visit to Morris Mueller and my ongoing with the AO. I'll say a little more in a minute. And second, my visit with John Charnley on the same trip. And the total hip with Charnley was by no means a certainty in North America. It was banned in the United States. So both of them had bad reputations, certainly in North America. The AO had no reputation at that time. And the John Charnley hip was banned in the States. It was Coventry, and we did actually the first bunch in Toronto because of that, with George Pennell and also at Sunnybrook. So I thought both of them were going to be incredible in terms of patient care. What I couldn't envisage was what happened to them. Certainly the AO, as this giant foundation connected with J&J the selling of the three Synthase companies with Hans-Jörg Wyss for the tidy sum of $21 billion. And I was president of the AO in 1992. I would never have envisioned, I'd never have seen that. And there's actually a funny little story. In 67, when we were at the first AO course, it's a Canadian story, so I can tell you. A guy named Bob Martin, who you may know from Hamilton, Ontario, was with me. And we were staying in the Post Hotel. And we were drinking a bit. And we were going to go to the AO banquet. The banquets now are 3,000 and 4,000 people. At that time, we had 90 people. That's all there were. That's all there were at the course. And even John Charnley was at that course. I said, Bob, why not? You're just a great songwriter. Why don't you write something? And he wrote a song called A-O, A-O, Canadian boy goes to Switzerland. A-O, A-O, Canadian boy goes to Switzerland.
Mark, your career has been wrong. You should have been a singer.
Dragon. So Bob and I went to the banquet. There were only 90 people there, including John Charnley, and Villeneuve was the president. So Bob and I stood up at the banquet and sang that song. And I can tell you, he was not pleased. The frowns that came over him, and I said to Bob, don't worry. Someday we're going to sing that song. And when I was president in 92, in front of 3,000 or 4,000 people, I said, all those in the audience, please come up to the stage, all Canadians. And Hans-Jörg Wyss came up as well, and we sang that song in 92. So that was really just a funny little side story about Canadians and the AO. And eventually the Americans caught on and saw that this was going to be Joe will tell you that He started the Yale courses and I was his faculty. And the first time I said we should plate, I did the tibia, we should plate an open tibia. 500 in the audience, you may recall, Joe got up and hissed and booed, literally. Because
good thing they didn't have tomatoes, they would have come flying for sure.
Vietnam War, which said you never put anything in an open fracture. And I just sat there and laughed. And the following year, I think it was Gregory, who was the head of the AAOS and was from Dallas. And he got up and said, hey, there's something in this, guys. Don't laugh anymore. This is going somewhere.
Yeah, and, you better listen. I remember him saying that.
You remember that. Oh, boy. Yeah. So
you guys better listen.
So what about you, Professor Schatzker? What did you ever think it was going to explode like it did?
No. No. Very different perspective. You know, each of us chose in some ways the same path and in some ways very different. You know, you suddenly have insights into things that you don't quite perceive what importance they would have later on in your life. You know, I go back to the days really when you asked that question, being a resident with Ted Dewar. I was the junior. There was actually a junior resident and a senior resident. And, you know, I all my interest in the early days was anatomy. I worked in the anatomy department. I actually spent nights doing the sections of the head and neck. I mean, to talk about knowing anatomy. And, you know, then as a junior intern, I said, you know, this specialty is based on anatomy. Orthopedics, it's anatomy and biomechanics. I love engineering. And that really opened the doors. And you talked about how suddenly people perceive things. You know, I remember, well, the classification, the names, my name is stuck to it. You know, I just looked at it and I said, look, there's Mason Hole. There was a guy from Alaska who had worked with him, who emphasized the rim, but that just didn't see the whole picture. And you suddenly have an epiphany. You just see it. And, you know, there's type one, the simple, type two, the simple with a wedge, and so on. I can't explain to this day, you know, how you get this sudden insight. And there have been other episodes where, you know, this insight came. But that's certainly the two earliest insights that I had.
Can I just ask, Professor Schatzker, I mean, that's absolutely fascinating because in modern day, or one might think, Professor Schatzker looked at thousands and thousands of x-rays and then, you know, broke them down into systems and then ultimately decided, you know, which are the groupings for the different types of classifications. And I don't think I've ever heard you say this particular statement that the idea for the classification came to you. It's almost as though from somewhere it was there and you started writing it down. Can you speak a little bit to like what happened? Like, did you just start?
I can still tell you.
Yeah.
I mean, geographically, I'm next door to the building, and I was sitting in the library. In those days, of course, we wrote by hand everything. And, you know, I looked at the proximal tibia, and I looked at its shape, and I had remembered what the others had written, and it almost pictorially came. I mean, if you look at the early drawings that I published, they were not drawn by an artist. I drew them myself. But they each incorporate the principle that I was trying to show. I can't really tell you more.
No, that's fascinating. I don't know if
Mo, in the pelvis, it was George Pennell that came up with that original classification, and he wouldn't publish anything. In 1980, we had a volume of clinical orthopedics devoted to George Pennell, and we published the classification of George. And then along came the AO, and Morris Mueller was also very interested in classifications, and he wanted everything put into a system of the AO. So in the pelvis, they took that classification and produced something I didn't like. I mean, my name is on it, but I didn't like it. Joe's classification is in there as well, but people didn't like using it. So everybody uses Joe's, and what's happened mainly in Europe is the original classification of George Pennell that we forwarded back in 1960 is being used way more than the AO. But people who are doing collections of cases and everything with AO backing and everything use the AO classification just to keep records. So you know what you're talking about when you're publishing. But it's a very interesting a sort of study.
Well, I think Professor Crater knows more than any of us on this call about the issues with classification systems, with basically you're taking continuous variables and putting them into dichotomous variables. But we're not going to go there because that's a whole academic treatise. I got one last question for you, if you don't mind, and then we're going to let you complete your day. But you two have been extremely generous. You three have been extremely generous with your time in mentoring other academic surgeons. I would venture to state that you've probably been involved with hundreds, if not thousands, of trainees that you supported in their careers. And my question for you, each one of you, did it come naturally, or is it something that you had experienced, or what was it that caused you to be so generous with promoting other individuals? So we'll start with Hans. Then we'll go with Professor Schatzker, and finally with Professor Teil. So Hans.
Yeah, I mean I was mentored, and I basically did what I had seen. I learned, you know, how to mentor and how to lead and so on through people that had mentored me, and I found it very rewarding to give that back. So I basically emulated my mentors. Like I said earlier, I did take some formal courses. You know, I don't think those existed back in the day, but I found that helpful. But I basically just emulated my mentors.
Professor Schatzker.
You know, teaching to me just came naturally. I had this inner, how should I say, almost an inner compulsion to communicate with other people and tell them what I understood, what I had seen, what I knew. And that really has pushed my whole life, has been this desire to communicate verbally, in writing. I mean, I've traveled the world propelled by this desire to share.
Thanks. Professor Teil, the last word.
I've never been able to give a last word, but anyway, I went into medicine originally because I wanted to care for people, and B, eventually, when I got thinking about it, I really wanted to do academics and make the world a better place. And the way to do that is by doing something unique, getting your fellows from around the world, writing books, lecturing. No one will believe it. Money had nothing at all to do with this. I came from immigrant parents who didn't have a pot to pee in when they arrived here. It had nothing to do with it. It had all to do with A, caring for the individual patient, and B, becoming academic. And I'll finish with a very strange little story. Got to have a story. When I was in grade 13 at that time, final year of high school, secondary school, I was on the football team of my high school. And we were near Joe's Hospital. Joe eventually went to the Wellesley. And some nice guy on my team fell over my ankle and broke my ankle. And there I am lying there, and they take me to the emerge at the Wellesley Hospital. And there's a guy on call there, I'll never forget his name, Joey Leventhal. He was a first-year resident. He just died at 101. And the fractured fellow, and a guy named Ted Mullins, who was the resident. And so Ted comes with the other two guys, and he said, "Well, here's a young man. He's thinking about going to med school, and you better do a good job on this ankle." It was a lateral ankle fracture. And so they got me, and they put me on the bed, and they say, "How do you want your ankle?" And I'm lying on bed, and it's pushed. It's 30 degrees in plantar flexion. Perfect. And they polish it up and they sign it. And Ted comes back in to check, as he would do, because he was a fantastic clinician, as you remember, Joe.
Yep.
And
you do.
He sat there and he said, "Wow, you two people have produced the most beautiful cast I have ever seen, and you've even signed it." He said, "Now take the damn thing off, because Marvin here does not wish to dance in the ballet. He wishes to become an orthopedic surgeon." And in front of him, they had to take the whole thing off. And I said to myself, I'd never forgot that. I said to myself, "Wow, I love this. I could do this. I could be an academic." And, you know, strangely, that's affected my entire life. That one episode, breaking my leg in grade 13 and watching Ted Mullen, who eventually went to Ottawa, and we became colleagues. He's a colleague of Joe's originally. But anyway, that's it in a short as I can make it.
Multiple stories of divine intervention, certainly sounds like to me. Mo, do you have any last comments?
You know, I mean, I can keep it in 30 seconds here, but, you know, sitting here, I could sit here all day and just listen and reminisce with you, because everything you say is just gold. And I suspect those listening in will also feel that. The one thing that struck me was, you know, Hans, we started off with Hans Krater saying that he has, you know, that a big part of his life was dedicated to the two individuals here, both Professors Tal and Shastra, for shaping who he is. And I think I'll just end in saying, in 1996, just as Hans Krater was starting his first AO course in Davos, he also attended a meeting where I was a resident. And we were trying to launch this study, which eventually became, you know, a very large trial called the SPRINT trial, over 1,000 patients. And I can honestly say that if Hans Krater had not been at that meeting and intervened to our group of surgeons who were really ambivalent, that trial wouldn't have happened. And so in many ways, I sit here looking at all the influences. And then for me, just as much as Professor Shastra and Tal have influenced Hans Krater, I think he had a huge impact on my life. So, you know, as the cycle goes, it's been lovely to reminisce. And as you can imagine, Mark, I could sit here for hours and hours listening to all of you chat about life. But thank you again. It's been an honor, a pleasure to be able to chat this morning.
Perfect way to end. Thanks so much. Thank you, gentlemen, and have a good day. Hans, I know you've been up all night on call, so I hope you get some rest.
I will. I'll get some. Take care.
Bye-bye, and thanks a lot.
This has been absolutely great.
Take care, guys.
Keep well, Dave.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Yeah, bye-bye. Bye.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.